بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. سورة بقرة discusses the five important branches of deen. In some places Allah Ta'ala discusses aspects about iman and beliefs. الذين يؤمنون بالغيب والذين يؤمنون بما أنزل إليك وما أنزل من قبلك. And then آمن الرسول بما أنزل إليه من ربه والمؤمنون كل آمن بالله وملائكته وكتبه ورسله لا نفرق بين أحد من رسله. Aspects pertaining to faith and aqaid have been discussed. Then the second important aspect of deen is amal, amal. So amal has also been discussed in this surah, approximately all the details of fasting have been discussed. ثم أتم الصيام إلى الليل أن وكلوا واشربوا حتى يتبين لكم الخيط الأبيض من الخيط الأسود من الفجر. So all aspects pertaining to fasting is contained in the surah. Then if you look at Hajj, then approximately the entire detail of Hajj, one ruku has been dedicated only for Hajj. الحج أشهر معلومات من فرض فيهن الحج. From the very, very beginning, the prohibitions of ihram, and then how are you supposed to be doing your Safa, Marwa, how you must then proceed to Mina, then Muzdalifa and Arafat, all these details have been given. Then the importance of namaz. حافظوا على الصلوات والصلاة الوسطى وقوموا لله قانتين. So all the details and the importance of namaz, roza and hajj and zakat as well. وقام الصلاة وآت الزكاة. So aspects pertaining to iman have been covered. Aspects pertaining to amal is also covered. Then the third important thing in deen is mu'amalat, your dealings. So, and the most important thing in dealings is وَالْمُوفُونَ بِأَهْدِهِمْ إِذَا أَهْدُوا. That when you undertake, when you get into a contract, then you fulfill your contract. Now this is such a comprehensive word that you fulfill all your contracts. The employer has got a contract with his employee, so he sees that he fills and completes his side of the deal. That in the contract there are two people, contract is not just one person, it's complete with two people. So the employee also sees that he fills his side of the deal. And a contract doesn't only involve an employer and employee, a lessor and a lessee. Both get into a contract and they need to see that they're filling their side of it. So in all contracts, whether it is a rental, an item of rental, a thing of employing, any type of contract. In fact, to the last detail, even if it's a contract pertaining to future dealings, the future dealing means the future payment, right? Then how do you get into it? Then how do you appoint witnesses? And what must be the type of witnesses? And how do you word out those contracts? So every detail has been given about contracts as well. And to crown it off, Allah Pak says, وَالْمُوفُونَ بِأَهْدِهِمْ إِذَا أَهْدُوا. And they are honest in their contracts. They fulfill, they're honest in their contracts. My side of the deal, I'm doing it full. In the contracts is also nikah. Nikah is also a contract. You have contracted a marriage, and when you said nakahtuha, then you alluded that all her responsibilities I have taken on. whether it's a clothing, whether it's a homing, whether it is a food, I'm taking on all the duties from today onwards. Right? And in this whole nikah contract, Allah Pak says that وَلَهُنَّ مِثْلُ الَّذِي عَلَيْهِنَّ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ. See how beautifully this is word. وَلَهُنَّ مِثْلُ الَّذِي عَلَيْهِنَّ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ. Okay, just as they have duties, then they have rights as well. As they have duties, then they have rights. But what Allah Pak is alluding here is that to get your contracts right, then each person needs to ensure that he is fulfilling his side of the deal. Now, this war in dealings, in interaction, in business, etc., is because I am more concerned that you fulfill your side of the deal. Whether I am fulfilling my side of the deal or not, I am not concerned. I am more concerned, very deeply concerned, that are you fulfilling your side of the deal? So, Allah Pak is praising that person, وَالْمُوفُونَ بِأَهْدِهِمْ إِذَا أَهْدُ. That his side of the deal, he is fulfilling it. وَلَهُنَّ مِثْلُ الَّذِي عَلَيْهِنَّ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ. The Quran is showing a solution to all fights and disputes and dealing, that each party is concerned, okay, am I fulfilling my side of the deal or not? And in fulfilling the side of the deal, one needs to see that even if it is that he has to give away the last comfort, he'll give away every comfort of his, just to see and ensure that he's fulfilled his side of the deal. I needed to employ a person, I employed him, I got the work out of him, right? Now that I got the work out of him, I need to give him his remuneration, I need to reward him. Now at the time of remuneration, now I am delaying him. At the time I wanted the work, then I was very soft with him, very kind with him. I was advertising my work, this is what you will get, and this is the return that you will get, and whatever. I told him everything. But I wanted the work, right? Very polite, very comfortable, very relaxed. Now I got the work done. I got what I wanted from him, I got it. Now I am stretching him for the payment. When I'm stretching him in the payment, then Allah Pak says that I will stretch you as well. You stretching this person, I will stretch you. So your business also will start collapsing. Everything that you're doing will collapse. Your health will collapse. Your business will collapse. The goodness in you will collapse. The motivation in you will collapse. Everything is collapsing. You stretching that person, you'll get stretched out. So what is due to him, you gave it to him. Give it to him in full. Even if it means the Islamic spirit requires that even if you have to give away your last comfort, just the zarurat, the basic necessity you're keeping, and the last zarurat means even your furniture, you have to give it away. It's a comfort. Even that extra vehicle you got, you're giving it away. Even that extra clothing, you're giving it away. Why? Just to ensure that I am fulfilling my contract, my side of the deal. You know how serious it is. The implication is not a serious thing. Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam is refusing to perform the janaza namaz. Why? By that person is not full, he didn't fulfill his contract. He was supposed to pay the person, he didn't pay the person. So I just flatly refuse to perform the janaza namaz. Oh, I don't want to perform the namaz. Can you miss out an opportunity like that, that Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam refuses to perform your janaza namaz? We will take it personally. When we invited someone to a nikah and he refused to come, we take it very personally. But that is a small thing. The nikah will still take place. And if Nabi Sallam refused to participate in the janaza namaz, then what's the use of life? You will think, you will scratch your head. What is the use of life when Nabi Sallam himself flatly refused, I'm not going to join your janaza namaz. What's the use of life? You see, what's the point? So every comfort that you will have to relinquish and you will give away, give it away, to ensure that that person's last cent is given. As in, I give him last cent, I'm finished, I'm cleared. Otherwise, you will be embroiled with mental turmoil within your home, within your children. Some problem you will definitely have. You stretching the person, you will get stretched. See? So this aspect of dealings you have to be so thorough about it. And the essence of dealing, I say, is every party is ensuring that my side of the deal, I'm doing it thoroughly. That person not doing it or not, he's answerable to Allah Ta'ala. But my side, I'm clear. I have done it. I promised him this much, I will do it for him. Abdullah bin Mubarak, see, these dealings, we don't count as part of Islam. Abdullah bin Mubarak, rahmatullahi, he is one muhaddis, right? That everybody speaks. The likes of Imam Bukhari sahab, rahmatullahi, speak good of him. He's such an expert, right? For a muhaddis to recommend someone else is a very serious thing, very, very serious thing. Because he will look at the person, he will look at him with a fine comb. And why he needs to look at the person with a fine comb is because I'm going to report hadith on his authority, based on his authority. So when I'm going to be recommending him, then I need to be thorough about the person. I need to be very thorough. Otherwise, if I'm recommending the person, I recommended the wrong person, people are reporting hadith on his authority, based on his authority, and they're reporting all wrong hadith. So you see what a serious thing it is to recommend. Like, you recommended someone's son as marriage, right, for marriage. You recommended your son or his son or someone else's son for the marriage of so-and-so's daughter, right? And that person turned out to be rotten. Then, how do you feel? How miserable don't you feel? Hey, but you made the recommendation. Now my daughter is gone. Now, I can't call off his marriage. And if I call off his marriage, will my daughter ever get remarried? See, what a problem you have put me into. Now, we don't understand that when we are wrong in our dealings, there's going to be a consequence. There's going to be some consequence, there's going to be a serious consequence. And Allah Pak, don't show us that day. That we are not right in our dealings. And then we feel there's no consequence to this. Whether it was we hurt the person verbally, financially, emotionally. This masjid here some years ago, an old chacha came in. So, he's now talking about the 1940s. So he's about 80 or 80 plus. And he's talking about that time. He says, you know, give me a story. But the story meant a lot to me. I learned a lot from him. Well, the man wasn't very dindar, shirt and pants and all that. So, all right, outwardly, it didn't mean much. But the lesson that he gave me, I really kept in my heart. So, one is I was shaken when he told me the story. But this was a man that seen time. He seen Durban in those days. People are still coming up, right? So he says to me, you see around the 1940s or just after 40s, 41, 42, 43. He must have been about 15, 20 years of age at the time. So he says, okay, you see my father and so-and-so chacha, they were friends. My father and this chacha, they were friends. So this chacha here wasn't very well off. So right, kata pita, you know, breaking even. He was kata pita, and my father was on a strong footing. So they were good friends. Those days, that friendship and they did for each other. So my father suggested to this chacha here, see this property is going, buy this property. So the chacha told him, see, I don't have the money for it. He said, no, don't worry. Just finance it through the bank. And just 1 year's interest you will pay, the second you will free the whole property. The rental is going to be so good. And the property is going for peanuts. You purchase that thing, a little bit of interest here and there, but 1 year, 1.5 years time, you will free the whole thing out. The rental is so good. So this chacha says to my father, he's telling my father, right? That means his father now. That you see, I don't want to do 1 cent of interest. I don't want to go in haram 1 cent. I don't want to do it at all. Because I know what is the consequence of haram. You're going to hurt someone, you're going to squeeze someone, you're going to do some haram. The consequence, the ramification may not be visible straight away, but time will say. So he says to me now, my father told the chacha, tu to gando che, in Gujarati, you're a madman. I'm showing you what is going to be the returns. Right? And still you don't want to go into this thing. No, I don't take 1 cent. I don't want to touch this thing here. Haram, thing that is tainted, someone else's money, and I must go and eat that person's money. I don't want to do this. And that man kept on shouting him, you know, you're a madman, you can't understand, you can't see things right. Man just swallowed it and he left it. Now this chacha is telling me, this old man that came to the masjid some 3-4 years ago, he's telling me, and you know what happened after that? He said, no, I don't know. I like to know, I'm very curious to know now, because you saw life over 17 years, 70 years from 1941, 42, till now count how much? at least over 70 years. So it's nice to see now what happened after that. He says, this chacha here, that my father was in friendship with, he says, thereafter I saw that in his family there was so much of deen, so much of goodness, happiness, friendship. Someone is a Molana, someone is doing Jamaat, someone is Khanka, someone is what. But there's so much of deen rolling, just rolling and flowing. Right? The deen is just rolling and flowing in this family here. And he says to me that my family, what happened to my family? His own family now. He says, my family, what happened? Now I'm seeing from 70 years. That someone has left the deen of Islam, na'uzubillah. And he's telling about his own son. He's telling about his own son. My son died about 3 months ago in a gay relationship. He was on the act in a gay relationship with a white in Johannesburg. See, so what happens? Now it takes time. So Allah Ta'ala he's not unmindful. He's not forgetful. Okay, this person did this. He sowed the seed here of hurt, of pain, of agony, of robbing, of cheating, of dragging, of interest. He did all this thing here. Now, it will come. You plant the seed today. Sometimes the fruit may come out in 1 month. Sometime in 2 months. Sometime it will take years. But that thing is going to come. It will come and bite you at the time that you least expect. It will bite you. So you see these dealings. We don't consider these dealings as an integral part of Islam. And the essence of right dealings is, I need to ensure that I am fulfilling my side of the deal. What was agreed, I will do it to the full. I won't do it 100%, 105% I'll do it. So that person doesn't have a finger to point towards me. I ask you then, will there be any fights? Will there be any court case? Will there be any mitigation and litigation? Will there be anything else? There won't be anything else. I want to fulfill my side of it, not 100%, 105% I will do it. Whatever small or big damage I have caused, whatever I have done, I need to see is cleared up. So this is the third aspect that is discussed in the Surah Baqarah. Right. The fourth aspect that is discussed in the Surah Baqarah is akhlaq, character. Right? Now what is the essence of good character? I showed you the essence of dealings, right? And what is the essence of dealings? Contracts, marriage, business, or rentals, leasing something. So how are you supposed to be dealing? Unfortunately, what has happened, our thinking has been warped, see. When the thinking has been warped, then we see things differently. See, we are schooling and educating ourselves and our children through schools, universities and colleges, right? And the type of education they are giving, that effect is rubbing on. Right? What are they talking about? They're talking about a gender equality. Right? That's the theme. Right? We're all equal, identical. In Lucknow, one couple just got married, and how it is now the norm that they go for the honeymoon, whatever. So the two just went for a honeymoon, went to some resort, whatever they went. So the wife, she sees in the resort. Now resort, nice house there, some garden, some trees and all that. So, some couple of good meters away, 20, 30 meters away, the wife spots a snake, a fat snake, you see. So the wife tells the husband, you know what? Hey, there's a snake, samp here, boy, samp. There's a snake. The husband turns around and tells the wife, koi marad ko bulao, call some man to kill the thing. Now, the wife tells him, "Lekin tum bhi mard ho, you are a man also." So he says, "Achhe waqt par tune yaad dilaya. You reminded me at the right time." See? So, when you said, when you claimed that there was equality, then you felt that you were not a man to do it. Man and woman are equal now. But you are equal to her, then she feels too weak to take things on. So you feel the same again. That you're also too weak to take things on. See. So you see, this is a farce. It's just a front. It's a front, and this front has been created for some sinister ends. Now what is the sinister end? See, jahalat, jahiliyat, has got extremes. You know, you have the right wing and the left wing. So you have both extremes. Very few taking the moderate path. Right. In the former days of ignorance, there was one extreme of jahiliyat, ignorance, one extreme. Right. Imagine the extent of the jahiliyat and the ignorance in the Western cultured group was that the woman was regarded as a dirty, stinking animal. That's a definition. Up to today is recorded. West Europe was taking a woman to be a dirty, stinking animal. Not a man, and not a good animal also, a dirty, stinking animal. That was a definition of a woman. So you see the extreme they put that woman into. That you got no place in the community. If you are something, then you are an animal. And you're not just an ordinary animal, you're a stinking animal. So that was the place they had given a woman. After lengthy deliberations, they said, alright, now we need to promote a little bit. Alright, she's an animal. Alright, it's only for our use that we can use this animal. It's only for our comfort that we can use this animal. But she is, by and large, she's an animal, but she's just for our comfort. In the Arabs also were not far behind. Arabs also, it was a thing of disgrace to have a daughter. It was against يَتَوَارَى مِنَ الْقَوْمِ مِنْ سُوءِ مَا بُشِّرَ بِهِ أَيُمْسِكُهُ عَلَىٰ هُونٍ أَمْ يَدُسُّهُ فِي التُّرَابِ. She's such a disgraceable thing now, such a despicable thing. Must I keep it with disgrace or must I thrust it into the earth, bury it alive? So in the Arab, this was the position of a woman. She was not in a position, that was the entire world, international law was, she was not in the position of owning wealth. She was not in a position of doing any business. She was not in a position of getting married to the man of her choice. No say. She's just a furniture. Whatever we do with you, that's what's going to happen to you. If your husband dies, for whatever reason, whichever circumstance he dies, then you are an inherited property. We will give you to the man of our choice or we'll keep you for ourselves. So this was the position of a woman, international law. Then the Hindu also was not very far. The Hindu, up till now, recently, about 10, 15 years ago, the standard was sati. And sati is that if the husband dies, then the wife also must offer herself to cremation. Like the husband is cremated, she must offer herself alive, she must get cremated. And if she doesn't, then there is so much of social acrimony against her. Everybody saying, ah, you're a dirt, you're a filth, no, you're a misfortune. Until she is forced, morally forced, to offer herself for cremation, and that's end of her. So she had no position. That was the days of ignorance. Right? That's one day, one extreme. You know, you get right wing and you get a left wing. So the other extreme was now, this is another extreme. The extreme, how it starts, what is the very, very essence of this extreme? The essence of it is, man wants to shirk off responsibility. When he wants to shirk off responsibility, then how he gives it, he captions it differently. How he captions it? He says, gender equality. So that's a beautiful caption. Pretext is very, very beautiful. What? Gender equality. But behind the scenes, what man is wanting to do, what he wants to do is, he's alluding to the woman that you will work for your own income, right? You will look after yourself. Your income, you must look after, you must take care. Whatever, whichever way, you become a professional woman, whatever woman, but you take care of your own income, right? Number one. But added to that, you must look after the children, and you must look after the house, look after our stomachs as well. So he wanted to shift off all his responsibility. So he says gender equality. So you must fend for yourself. I'm not responsible for your food. I'm not responsible for your home. I'm responsible to maintain you. You must take care of that. And added to that is you must take care of the children, you must take care of the home, and you must take care of the food. So I ask you, is this fair? Or is this cheating? But wrong pretexts, you see. So this is the second period of ignorance that we are going through. One was what was past, and this is the second period. Where the only thing that is required now is just to give everything a good look. Appearance must look nice. It must appear to be nice, and then whatever kachra you fill into it is all right. Last week sometimes, one student, I didn't know that he was a graphic designer, right? So I was asking, what is a graphic designer? Of course, oh, I didn't hear the word, and I don't know what the thing entails. So he tells me, you know, company logo or a sign or a sweet wrapper or whatever. So we have to design the whole thing. I said, all right. But that gives me some idea, you know, that we can use this also for our deen. How we'll use it for our deen is, in today's life, right, we are looking for good presentation. Presentation must be good. The content can be rotten, it's all right. But the presentation must be very good. Now look at it, how it plays off, right? How it plays off. So, when a child is born, or is about to be born, there will be 50 telephone calls, 500 emails, you've got a whole list of names. Can you suggest a name? And the most awkward of names, you know, what name now? Shamim and Hamim and what, I don't know, where will they get the names from? But some odd name that is never used by anybody. That type of name you want for our son, for our daughter, right? Hey, I don't say a good name is not an appropriate thing. It's not a desirable thing. But the greater thing is the content, what you have made of the person. So in the past, they gave simple names, Muhammad, Ismail, Yusuf, Ahmad. That was the name they gave. But the greater concern was the content. Do you make the person or not? Now the parent is more concerned that we have to give a very extraordinary, you know, such a name is coming from space somewhere. Nowhere, you don't hear of the name here. That type of name you have to give the child, right? But then the content that we put into the child, that nobody's concerned. Is he an honest person? Is he a good person? Is he truthful? Has he got good values? If we get him married, will he look after the next person's daughter? If he gets into business, will he be a straight and honest person in business? We're not concerned about them. Just the name must be very exciting, very thrilling. So you see the deception that is involved in this. Now every woman is involved. She is worried about a good name, a fantastic name, you know, for a child. So the cover must be good. But what goes inside, nobody's concerned. So then I explain the person, the graphic designer, asked him, see, just to make this even more conspicuous, you know, look at it, it's an egg, right? There's a little bit, there's a little dust outside, a little bit dust, but it's a free-range, good quality egg, right? It's a free-range egg, it's a good quality, but a little bit dusty from outside. Not looking so attractive. But it's healthy, content is very good. You can't flaw the content. The content is absolutely fabulous, right? On the other end, you're getting an egg, battery chicken egg, right? Yateem egg. And then with that, it's spotless. From the outside, it's spotless. No speck you find, no dust. Absolutely spotless. But within that egg, it's rotten. The content is rotten. Which egg will you go for? What we are going for is rotten. So just the cover must be looking nice. And the inside of the person can be rotten, can be doing anything. We're not concerned about it. So long as that outside looks very beautiful. Islam doesn't say that you mustn't be neat, right? Allahumma aj'al sirri khayran min alaniyati. Waj'al alaniyati saliha. You have two fronts. Every person has two fronts. One is the inner self and one is the outer. In interview, you're giving your best, you know, interview. Going for a proposal, it looks like this person came from Mars somewhere. This person, you've never seen a person like this. Such a good proposal we got. So at the interview, he's trained how to go for that interview. He's trained how to go for that proposal. But the content, nobody's concerned. Nobody's concerned at all. You know, someone was asking me, 2 days ago, was asking me that, is it permissible to be traveling with his mother-in-law someone? I said, I don't say it's impermissible, it's permissible. She's a mahram, perpetually you can't make nikah to her, right? Once you have consummated the marriage with her daughter, then you can't marry the father. Perpetual, right? But in this day, I would recommend that you don't travel alone. You don't travel alone and don't become too close to your mother-in-law. Respect her, show her the respect, show her that you are you love her, what she done, appreciation, do all that. But just keep a little bit of a distance. So he asked me, why must you act so strange? But isn't she like my mother? So like she's your mother, she's like your mother, you respect her the same like your mother. But don't become too attached. Then I explained him two stories. That stories came to me direct, so I don't see the third person, direct. One person says that he just returned from Umrah or Hajj, right? So as he returned, he's in the airport, so the mother-in-law, everybody came now. First time, they just 2 years they married, so they came, went for Hajj and they came back. Now, as they came back, now the mother-in-law is giving him a hug, you know, and she's got tight clothing. He says to me that I could actually feel the nipples touching, rubbing on my chest. And the meanwhile, I know the masla of musaharat, you know, that you're going to touch, you're going to do any lust, smallest lust, and the nikah is gone. So I had every energy I had, every ounce of energy I had to use it to practice the restraint, not feel anything here. But that mother-in-law of mine, Bichara, she's just hugging me. My son-in-law. Now they don't know parameters. When they don't know parameters, you have to exercise it. Can you see now, it's such a sensitive thing. Are you going to discuss it? And you're not going to discuss it, you're going to be appearing as though a very respectable person. But if you practice this, you are living in haram. You're living in suraj. Worse than suraj, because in haram you're living. You die in haram. You're living in haram and you're dying in haram. That's worse off. Disgrace comes for that moment, alright, you divorce now, that girl is haram for you, whatever reason, haram for you, right? But you can overcome that. But can you imagine the consequence? You lived in haram and you died in haram. Can you imagine? You died in soaking in haram, drowned in haram. That's one story I gave him. The second story, the stories are real, it's not made up, right? That come to me, people come and ask, right? So he says, no, his friend or someone went for a proposal, right? So like they have it in the proposal, that girl will go for the tray, tea, whatever. But I think nowadays you don't need to do the proposal because the boys and the girls have done everything. Everything is finished. It's just a formality now, right? So now he went for a proposal, so the girl came with the tea, whatever, samosas, mitai, whatever. He's offering it. So now that boy is looking surprised. What happened? No, it's not this girl that I'm looking for. In the meanwhile, while they're discussing and all that, the mother-in-law came with a tight fitting and all this. No, this was the one I was looking for. That boy saying, this was the one I was looking for. Now, he doesn't know it's a mother-in-law, but he says very clear, this was the one I was looking for. So the mother-in-law is so attractive, she's wearing whatever clothes, she never gets old. Mother-in-law, with all the gymming and hemming and all that, she's never getting old. So he's getting interested not for the daughter, but for the mother-in-law. See. So I say, bhai, this is not a time, not normal time. It's like an abnormal time we're living in. It's not the same world that we knew of. It's a different type of world we're living in. Different type of class of people, like we never hear before. We never see before, we could never imagine. This is the class of people that we are living with. So the additional precaution that is needed to be exercised. We can't be taking things relaxed. Oh, everything is going smooth. Everything is carrying on normal. Everybody's got an agenda. In a business, got an agenda. Huh? Don't you hear about it? Every now and then, some Muslims are opening up a conglomerate. Don't you hear of it? And people pulled up the money, 30 million, the man is gone, disappeared. Business is gone down. Don't hear about it. Every month, 5 months, 6 months, you're hearing about it. Don't hear about this thing here. So I tell them, this is the greatest disservice to Islam you have done. There can't be a greater disservice. Now because the news is going around everywhere. When the news is going everywhere around, so that kafir, that Hindu, that Christian say, yeah, you're Muslims, you can't trust you guys. Can't trust you people. You took this person for a song, you took that person for a song. So I ask you, what good of you are for Islam? You have this walk out of Islam. Because you are a disgrace, you are an embarrassment to Islam. You are a sting to Islam. You are rotten to Islam. That Hindu is also disgusted. It's a church group that is investing with you. And then you walked away with his money. And you don't feel anything about it. It's a kafir that went with you. And then you don't feel anything about robbing the person, cheating the person. You still walk around brazen with your chest open. You don't feel anything about it. I say, what Islam have you got? La deena liman la amanata lahu. I ask you, is that what Islam is teaching? Aren't you a disgrace? Aren't you an embarrassment? So now I'm doing this deeni work. What work are you doing? Get your house in order. Get yourself in order first. So you see this mu'amalat, how important it is. How important it is. There are still those people that want to loan. They say, now, we know that the rewards for lending money is 18 times. And the reward for a sadaqah is 10 times. You know, you give sadaqah, and the reward is multiplied 10. But if you loan the person, then your reward is multiplied 18 times. Why is it that your reward is multiplied 18 times? There are several reasons that appears. But one reason that comes to my mind is when a person, I lent the person money, you know. I'm waiting for that thing to be returned. So you are in constraints, waiting when the money is going to come, It's difficult. But when you give that sadaqah, it's out of your memory, it's gone out. You wipe it out of your memory. But when you lend the person money, then you are constrained. You're constricted now. You're constricted. When the money is going to come? Well, for the pain that you are going through, your reward is multiplied 18 times. And here it's just 10 times because that is gone. You wrote it off, finish. And here you're waiting. 1 year, 2 years, I'm waiting. My money must come. So there are those people that want to give that money, but they are forced not to give it. See, how do we trust a Muslim? This is the words that are coming out. How do we trust a Muslim? Can we trust a Muslim? It's a work of a few people that have got that obsession with wealth. And then they paint a bad picture for Islam. Bad picture of Muslims, that this is the type of people we're working with. Then you have to go to kafirs, right, to arbiter in our matters. I say, do we deserve this type of a treatment? Do we deserve that type of treatment? We go to kafirs, non-Muslims, gays, etc., that are sitting on those benches. We have to go to them to arbiter, to mediate our matters. Does it deserve that? Do we deserve that type of a treatment? But then, this bunch of scoundrels, rogues, thieves, they've got together under pretext, you know, it's just a pretext. They've got together, they robbed this person, hit this person down, cheat that person, and you don't feel anything about it. I've cheated the person, I've robbed him, I got the pretext, I'm going by the book. In the meanwhile, the man is enjoying, he's going around for Umrah, going around here, there. But you had that money, why don't you pay these people out? This person is crying, that person is a widow, this person is doing for someone else. But don't you have that type of conscience? You see that word, mufuna bi ahdim. How the Quran Sharif is talking about you with that emphasis. That you see, your namaz is in the masjid, nobody knows about your piety. Your roza is in your stomach, nobody knows about it. Anybody knows about your roza? Your heart is in Makkah, right? Nobody knows about the piety there. Right? So nobody, zakat is in the poor person's hand. So nobody knows about your generosity. But your dealings, people see your deen through your dealings. The level of your honesty, the level of your righteousness, the level of your truth is in your dealings. So the greatest advertisement for Islam is your dealings. Greatest. See, if you say, you know, deal, go and deal with a Muslim. Yeah? You want a good system of business, Islamic system. You want to enter into a partnership, Muslim. Yeah? You want to get into any type of a business venture, get with a Muslim. Allah Pak shows us that day. We have become so negative in our dealings, so negative. Say, that's the last person you must deal with. Don't get to them. So you see that they don't want to lend you the money, they don't want to give you money. Why? Because of the same reason. Otherwise, there are people that want to do it. But you see the dealings that we are going through, the wrongs that we are going through. And I say these things that they may carry on. Whoever is doing whatever, they may carry on. And the day the stick of Allah Ta'ala comes, it is the time that you won't least expect comes onto you, sometimes it's to your wife, sometimes onto your child. There's something is going to come and hit you, it's going to come and eat you, it's going to come and bite you. But it's going to come very, very severely. It'll come just off a sudden. And then you don't know where to hide your face in shame. Embarrassment and shame, you don't know where to hide. So you see this third aspect of Islam, and that is contracts. Well, mufuna bi ahdim iza ahdu. And the fourth aspect that the Quran Sharif, Surah Baqarah discusses, is akhlaq, character. Character, mannerisms, values, right? And the essence of values is encapsulated in this word here, وَالصَّابِرِينَ فِي الْبَأْسَاءِ وَالضَّرَّاءِ وَحِينَ الْبَأْسِ. in character and mannerisms, the essence of it is, are you firm? Are you a steady person? Because in life, you're going to have adversities and you're going to get prosperities as well. Some will be for you, some will be against you. And sometimes one person, your wife may be with you today, tomorrow she's against you. Today she's making darling, and tomorrow she may shout you, right? But in all that, are you going to be straight? Are you going to be absolutely straight? So sabiri means you're calm, you're composed, the stability, that perseverance remains in you in under all circumstances. You're not a changed person. Someone shouted you also, you're still good. Someone hurt you, you're still good. Someone broke up from you, you're still good. Someone seen you right, you're still good. He robbed you, you're still good. So that goodness is just flowing under all circumstances. You've got a plan that is absolutely strong, firmly rooted. Sabirin. Firmly rooted. Enduring. Persevering. So that is why this is Mansoob al Madah. Was Sabirin. Allah should have said, could have said, was Sabirun. But he said, was Sabirin fil ba'asa'i wa dharra. At the time of prosperity, adversity, hardship, suffering, whatever is going around. But you are a cool, calm, relaxed person. Mentally you're alright. Physically you're alright. Verbally you're alright. You're not hurting the person. You're not doing anything. No harm. You're wishing for good. You're practicing good. You're showing akhlaq and character. At any time of the day, night, any time of the year, business is down, trends are down or up. But you're still the same person, normal. Normality is there. So the perseverance in you. So this is called Mansoob al-Madah. Mansoob al-Madah, in other words, you gave it a zabar, you're supposed to be giving it a pesh, right? But you gave it a zabar because of the praiseworthy position this person is in. That in, under all circumstances, he's still the same person. In the business, he's the same person. Outside the business, he's the same person. At home, he's the same person. In the masjid, he's the same person. He's the same person. Cool, calm, respectable. He is not fluctuating, all steady, one is going on one pattern, one line is going. وَالصَّابِرِينَ فِي الْبَأْسَاءِ وَالضَّرَّاءِ وَحِينَ الْبَأْسِ. So Allah Ta'ala rounds up this whole passage, this whole verse, Allah Ta'ala rounds it up, وَالصَّابِرِينَ فِي الْبَأْسَاءِ, because this encapsulates mainly character, but every other dimension of life, every dimension of ibadat, whether it is namaz, whether it is your iman, whether it is your mu'amalat and dealings, in all aspects, you have got one consistent plan. You persevere. You're strong. You don't have any fluctuations. You don't go up and down. You don't seesaw. Go straight. الصَّابِرِينَ فِي الْبَأْسَاءِ وَالضَّرَّاءِ وَحِينَ الْبَأْسِ أُولَٰئِكَ الَّذِينَ صَدَقُوا وَأُولَٰئِكَ هُمُ الْمُتَّقُونَ. So Islam is not just لَيْسَ الْبِرَّ أَن تُوَلُّوا وُجُوهَكُمْ قِبَلَ الْمَشْرِقِ وَالْمَغْرِبِ. It's not just presentation like how we have taken it today. It is not a good pretext only, right? Like how the Western world has made it today, that outwardly you must give a good impression of yourself. Person came, so you say, congratulations, good morning, thank you, yes sir. Right? Islam also advocates the use of good, respectable words. But it doesn't just confine it to just good, respectable words. More than the good words that you are using is good mannerisms and values. Values are good. Mannerisms are good. That mannerisms, اللهم اجعل سري خيرا من علانيتي. Dua. The hadith is that my inner self must be better than my outside. I'm reflecting something. I'm showing myself to be a good person. I'm wearing kurta, beard, topi and all that. I'm showing all that, right? That's good. That's required. But my inner self must be even better than what I'm portraying. I'm portraying something. My inner self, my akhlaq, my character, my ways, my behavior must be far better than my inner self. مَجْعَلْ سِرِّي خَيْرًا مِّنْ عَلَانِيَتِي. Not that you must make your outer self look ugly and unpleasant and untidy. No, that's not Islam. Yes, you need to be neat, but don't overdo it. Just with moderation, you were neat, you were tidy, it's enough. Now, this type of a style, you got a white topi, must be a white kurta, with a white trouser, white socks, and a white shoe also. Then the carpet must match with the ceiling, and the ceiling must match with the cupboard, and the cupboard must match with the furniture. This is not a Muslim's life. It's a woman's life. Zanana pana. It's so for a woman to do all this matching and mixing. That's a woman. But bring some manlyhood in you. I don't say again that you must be untidy and look miserable. Don't spoil yourself. But this is not Islam. No. This must match with that paint. Really, sometimes you go into that type of homes, you don't feel at ease at all. Hey, this is matching like this. The roof is with the tile is with the furniture is with my shoes. Everything is matching. What do you get out of this whole thing? So sometimes this girlish type of behavior permeates us. And we don't even realize it, that it's a girlish behavior. And that girlish behavior, because our whole minds are full of that girl, right? So that girlish behavior permeates us. And we begin to think like that. Everything must go like that. Mardana pana le aao. One topic just comes to my mind now. One person came and asked one question. So whatever I'm talking to you now is just what I discussed through the week, right? One youngster came and he says, I have a passion for sports. Young, now he's about 23, married, perhaps about to get a child or something, or got a child. I can't leave the sports out. Now he knows perhaps that I don't have an interest for these things here. So perhaps he's now asking for permission, you know. But I must just rubber stamp that, the sports or whatever, recreation. So I tell him, see, let's get it straight, right? Recreation Islam doesn't forbid. But now, there's different levels of recreation, right? There's different levels of recreation. And before I speak about recreation, now understand the people that are pushing this thing here. Recreation, sports, entertainment, right? The people that are pushing for it is a class of people who don't have any type of a family life, right? As the child is born, in 2 years or so, the child is pushed into a creche, right? So the mother is absolved of responsibility, the father is absolved of responsibility. And as the child grows about 17, 18, boy or girl, he is pushed out of the house. You go and fend for yourself. Well, you go and battle your life, right? 17, 18, I mean, you must look after yourself. So he's pushed out of the house. When an old man comes about 65, 70, and he is dependent, then he's pushed out of the house. You go look after yourself because you're becoming a hurdle in our comfort and our luxury. So that is the mentality. They don't have any, they're not family orientated. Cold lives, living in cold countries, coming from cold countries, Norway, England, etc. So there's cold in them. There isn't that warmth in them. Right? They are the ones that are manipulating the education system. So when they are manipulating education system, they are manipulating fashion. So they are permeating our brains, penetrating through our brains. No family orientation. They're not family orientated. And just to show that we have got some concern for family, they will have one day in the year, Mother's Day, Grandma's Day, whatever, to show that we respect all this. So they don't have a thing like family orientation, and they don't have a thing like religion. One person here, an engineer, and he said, I tried every sport. Climbed the Everest. I jumped off from a flying plane into a parachute and down. So everything he tried, every type of sports. So, very interesting character. He'd like to hear his stories, you know. Experience he had here, there and all that. So anyway, he says to me that he was in London, working in London for some time. So he says, I went to London is like the hub for Christianity, center of Christianity, right? And I went to one of the most popular churches, passed there on a Sunday at peak time, at about 11, 12 o'clock. I saw not even one single car parked out. So there isn't any religion in them, no religion and no family orientation. So there was a definite void in their lives. When there was a definite void in their lives, then they had to fill it up. So how they filled it up? Recreation, sports. See where it's coming from. Try and understand, try and work it out in your mind, where it came from. Right? You have to fill it up with sports. After every few months, go to Berg's or somewhere, go for a holiday. Tired of that, go to America, Disney World, whatever, right? Tired of that, now and then, go for Makkah, Mukarramah, make one tawaf and have a good time there as well. So the whole mind is orientated with the recreation. So Makkah and Tawaf is by the way. We just do one Tawaf also, guna get maaf. Go for shopping, enjoy a little bit, just chill out a little bit. But the mind is just to go and cool off, to relax and to go and entertain yourself. So it's not in the frame of ibadat. So that class of people have started this thing here. And that class, this is the class that has started, right? Now do we realize what we are going into? Do we realize how we are being consumed? One person tells me, in this masjid, he tells me that his family is suffering like this, this person here, that person is suffering, constraints, constricted, etc. But every now and then his parents are going Umrah, they can go and bust 100,000 rands. For the whole trip, maybe one tawaf or whatever, it was enough. Shopping here, that was their life. I say they got, there's no understanding, there's no reasoning. The person's sister, his brother, his family, somebody is suffering, immediate or extended. What does the hadith say? The hadith says that you can't be a Muslim if you are sleeping comfortably whilst your neighbor is in constraints. He doesn't have sufficient food to eat. And you're feeling relaxed, you're going to busting up money like this. I say, is it right? To put up some furniture and some finishing in your home, you can bust another 100,000 rand. But you know, to look after your sister, look after your mother, you know, you have to pull up money. We have to rake up money for that. But then, very, very comfortable, you could find money to go for everything else, to do everything else. But for this thing, you need to make 10 mashwaras. Must I spend for my mother so much? For my sister, for my aunt, must I spend? But for that furniture, for that finish, for that home, for that comfort, no mashwara was required. So that means you don't regard this as an important thing. And that means also that foreign mindset, that foreign influence has permeated you. You're thinking like that. That Western influence, that Western orientation is influencing you. You can't think right any longer. Whereas you have to spend there and nobody is supposed to be knowing about it. Hazrat Zainul Abidin, rahmatullah alayhi, is the great, great grandson of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. He passed on, and the day he passed on, it was discovered that about 500 families were living off his generosity. It was just between him and Allah Ta'ala. 500 poor families he was supporting. And he kept it such a secret, nobody knew. Now after he passed away, then, our flower didn't come this month. What happened? Now he discovers that man passed away. Our monthly rental, he didn't come this month. He passed away. He kept it such a secret, his household didn't know about it, that he's doing this. Now we're doing a little bit of ihsan for someone, little bit of some generosity, then the whole world will come to know. But I ask you, all the finishing that you did in your home, all the fancy, the aesthetics, the cosmetics that you did, you made any mashwara with that. That little bit of generosity, I did this. But where's the reasoning? Where's the understanding of deen? Understanding of deen is gone. Where you're not supposed to be making mashwara and help the person, there you're making mashwara. And where you're supposed to be making mashwara, that this cosmetics, this aesthetics in the house, is it really required? Is it a genuine need? Or must I go for umrah when my sister, my brother, my so-and-so friend, my so-and-so family is in constraints? Must I go for this? There you're making mashwara for that. So you see these foreign influences, how they've overtaken us. They've drowned us. So I explained this person here. Unfortunately, this entertainment, sports, recreation, right? It's overtaken every age group. Small child, plastic scooters, etc., right? Then as he grows up, now even a middle-sized person is bike and hike. Huh? Doesn't it happen? Bike and hike. And you're actually talking about recreation becoming your means of your livelihood. People are talking like that. That the recreation must become the means of your livelihood. One person became now international, so everybody feels that my son also will become international, so let me send him for cricket. From such a big population, from a couple of hundreds of millions, one person got selected. Now my son also will become that. My son will become that. Your deen is gone. Every understanding of deen is gone, but you have to train to become like that. So for the middle age is this. And after that, after 35, 40, you see you're not so active, then look at those the celebratories, the albums, go and see the soccer. Someone is playing in Italy, go take a flight, go see that. You can see now you're not so active. And then as you're aging, they'll fly around here, there and all that, and golf, and then bowls. Until Malakul Maut bowls you out. That's the end of life. Allah give us that understanding, that before we bowled out, we fill our begging bowl before Allah Ta'ala. Allah.